advise you to get off the streets as quickly as possible. It'll soon be a war up there.
And we are, as a people, opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths.
I know for a fact.
And to secret proceedings.
Weapons of mass destruction.
I have a dream.
I take the threat very seriously.
A new world order.
Your government thanks you for your participation.
You are now listening to the world famous Sofa King podcast.
Please read from sheets. I am Sofa King.
Sofa King.
Now repeat all very fast, please.
I am Sofa King.
Faster.
I am Sofa King.
No, not so fast. Loses meaning.
I am Sofa King.
You say funny things.
Like to welcome everybody to the Sofa King podcast, and today we're talking about Brent and his psychotic episodes.
It happens.
It does.
So, I think it's only right to begin with. I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Somebody apparently,
somebody going to come in, like, save me. I'm drowning.
Today, we actually a listener requested. A somewhat odd topic, but we dove into it because I was very curious once I heard about this. He requested that we look into the JonBenet Ramsey murder, specifically dealing with a very strange conspiracy theory that surfaced in 2014 and has gone somewhat viral recently.
Yes,
but we'll get into the conspiracy later. But so today we're talking about we're going to start with pageants, just the idea of children's pageants, and then we want to look at the murder itself of JonBenet Ramsey. Again, it's one of those 90s things. The 90s for me was a blur of college and never watching any television. I just know it was always on CNN and something happened and she died and she was in a pageant, and I knew nothing about this murder. I knew that the parents were held responsible. You know, everybody kept saying they did it, and then I know years later they were supposedly exonerated. I didn't know anything. I knew none of the details. So when I looked into it, I was quite shocked because it's kind of disturbing and strange.
I just know for 20 years, if you look to your left at the grocery store, there would be like candy bars and an Inquirer magazine or Examiner,
with a picture,
Star magazine, whatever it is. Yeah. With a picture of her.
Yeah.
Like constant. Like, I think probably right now still, you can probably find that.
Yeah, probably.
Well, there's new stuff surfacing every year.
There were a million pictures of that girl with the tiara. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think largely because the murder still remains unsolved.
Yes.
So, I mean, I know there are still, you know, active investigations, you know, on the cold case going on. So every time there's any new evidence brought up on this case, then everybody gobbles it up and it explodes. And
it's been reopened and handed off a new district
multiple
attorney
times,
and multiple times, unsealed to, cases.
All kinds of madness.
So we want to thank Mike Money on Twitter for offering up this.
Yes.
Topic.
And again, as we always say, and sometimes we do a call consciously to get you guys to shout at some topics at us, and sometimes it just happens. But if there's anything that you want to hear about, whether it's a conspiracy, whether it's a historical event, whether it's your favorite food, whether it's a corporation or a cute puppy, I don't know, I'm just saying words now. regardless of what it is. I mean, if there's a topic out there that you're interested, then hit us up. Hit us up on Facebook and tell us what you think the topic is. Hit us up on Twitter, Instagram, all of the goodies. Just let us know and we will think about throwing it in as a topic. So,
and Dave S. On Twitter talked about our last show on Scientology. He wrote, he's an avid fan, but he wrote, Dave ranting, Brent getting drunk because Dave wouldn't stop talking, and me.
I'm glad no one blamed me for getting drunk. That's fine.
Yeah.
I was a little worried about that.
Yeah.
I'm still sadly looking at that bottle of whiskey that Brad tongued last week.
It's good. It's had a chance to marinate. But now it's got a, and now I'm sick though. So if you hear me hacking in the background, I don't know if I'm sick or allergy. Man, the allergies are just horrible right now.
The trees are.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I don't know if it's that or I'm sick or what, or I deserve it, or Satan's got me or God's got me. I don't know which way to go. So
that's a tough call for you.
Yeah, because God could be trying to f*** me.
Yeah.
That was a bad word.
Oh, that was a bleep.
That was a bad word.
Dang, I couldn't save myself that time.
I have a couple shout outs too.
Yeah, give her shout outs. And then we also need to talk about an upcoming event, and then we'll get into the topic.
So we got a bunch of Instagram fans. We've been marketing pretty hard on Instagram, and apparently it's paying off. Lots of people following back, fans that we didn't know we had coming out of the woodworks. We have a new fan in Australia. So, Shane Harkins got some competition on the other side of the land of the down under. MPH 1986 is an Australian truck driver, and that guy hit us up and he's been listening to the podcast. So thank you for listening. A Happy Trace on Instagram hit us up, and they had never listened to a podcast before, but somehow stumbled upon us. And they wear earbuds at an elementary school and listen to us, which makes me really nervous. Yeah,
a black trench coat and have rifles in it.
Yeah, it's a woman, and their words are, they are Netflix hooked. They've been binge listening, and they work at an elementary school, though. I thought that was kind of funny.
That is funny.
Welding Divaness is sending us some Canadian whiskey, apparently. We're supposed to get an update when that shipped out.
So. And ask Armando, because we'll put you on blast.
Yeah, Armando, we're going to talk about you next episode, though, because Dave can't drink this early in the morning. So when it gets a little later, we'll thank you, Armando. Yeah, I already drank some, but we're not allowed to talk about it. Who else? Marina Ward from Ireland started listening to us as well and contacted us. So thank you for listening to us as well. And Brian Ross will have a heart attack if I don't say Life Bites YouTube channel. He started a new YouTube channel, and I watched it. It's actually really interesting.
Brian Ross is a good friend of the show. He's been on several times. Talks about mysterious disappearances. Drinks a lot, swears, and is funny.
Yeah,
and a lot of people have had good comments when he's been on the show. They really like the episodes. So.
He's getting a bunch of listens or a bunch of views on those YouTube videos, and for good reason. It's actually pretty cool. Yeah. So check it out. It's called really Life. Good. Yeah, Life Bites, and Bites like computer bites. So LIFEBYTES. So if you get some time on YouTube, check that out.
And apparently, I'm guest narrating an upcoming.
I heard about that. Yeah, I didn't know if you knew about it or.
But yeah, he told me. He told me. I'm glad he told you.
Yeah.
He asked my permission. Actually, he's like, can I use Dave? And I was like,
yeah.
I was like, well, he's my slave, and don't ever forget that. But you can use him. Go ahead.
And I think that's it. A couple other podcasts actually hit us up and asked for like some advice and tips and some stuff like that newer podcast.
We don't even know what we're doing. Why are they asking us?
Apparently, though. Yeah. So I answered the questions I could, but the Two Trees podcast and Backwine podcast. Backwine podcast, I started listening to for a second. I haven't heard these podcasts. They have British accents, though, and they called the Super NES the SNES, which I thought was kind of cool.
That is.
Within 5 minutes, I was like, oh, they said SNES. That's kind of cool. But I've just been busy. So I'm going to try to check those out, but thank you for hitting us up, guys.
Cool.
That's it.
So let's look at pageants. Wait. Right.
Oh,
so,
no, our the show we're actually going to be at
here. Oh, yeah, locally. Yeah. If you are local, we're going to be, what's the actual date on that?
It's the 12th.
Saturday the 12th. We'll be showing up at, I'll let you take
it's
over.
It's Team Geeks Relay for Life, basically a benefit. They're doing a benefit concert and having an all day like game-a-thon, pop culture, nerd stuff, card games, Magic Gathering, probably, you know, a bunch of different stuff like that. If you're into
probably comics and cosplay and all the rest of it.
Yes, gaming and nerding and all that stuff, and you want to get your nerd on.
And the thing is, we're really good at cosplay, and I'm gonna go as Brad, Brad's gonna go as Brent, and Brent's gonna go as me, and you're not going to be able to tell the difference. Yep.
And Tyrone will be there. We'll probably have him tied up in a chair so he doesn't kill all the white people, but he will be there.
Trent will be there as well.
Trent,
if his eyes are red, don't worry about it.
Yeah, Trent really doesn't like talking to people. So
hit us up if you need more details. We'll post some stuff on Facebook, but we will be there. We'll be giving out some swag.
It's at the Kern County Fairgrounds. So if you're in town in Bakersfield area or surrounding, or you want to fly out just to meet us, we will be there. So Kern County Fairgrounds in the Arts Building on Saturday the 12th. It starts at 9, and I think it goes till 9 at night. They're having a benefit concert, music, games, all that fun stuff. So
standard nerd
stuff.
And if you do fly out, we will reimburse you for nothing.
So I was all, ooh, scary.
I wonder if they'll let us take whiskey into the thing, or we have to sneak it in.
Well, I guess we'll find out.
In a flask. Yeah,
we'll find out on
my floor. Iced tea glass. Yeah.
we're gonna be bootleggers.
Yeah.
How come there's no ice in that iced tea?
I don't know.
How come there's no tea in that iced tea? So pageants, right? The whole, one of the big things, the reason I think once I looked into this case, I mean,
it's what case is that? Did we even say what it was?
Yes. The case of JonBenet Ramsey.
Okay.
And Ramsey's. I mean, it was a, it's a brutal murder. It's tragic. I mean, it's really bad, but I really don't think it would have made the national news that it made if she wasn't in pageants. If there weren't all these pictures of her dolled up, I really just think it would have been one of hundreds of child murders in the nation, and it wouldn't have made.
Well, the she was the 6 year old Miss Colorado, right?
Yeah. Is that what the title was?
She held several. And her parents, right? Her father was really wealthy. He was the president of a place called Access Graphics, and it was a business computer system company that became a subsidiary of Lockheed Martin. And when I read about him and I saw that his name is John Bennett Ramsey.
There's a word for that. They mixed her name.
JonBenet Ramsey is her daughter. I was like, ego much? Like, just wait till you have a son and name him John. Like,
No, they had a son. His name is Burke.
Right. But I think the son, was the son second? Or was he just weird?
Older, like that's older
he's
old,
he was nine.
He's first.
He was nine when she was six.
That's that's called something too, and it's similar to menage a trois, but it's not called that. It's called like a it's French.
Well, it's
a mixing of a blending of names.
Yeah, and it's the same thing. Like they're people that put the adult teeth on their 6 year old to make them look older with makeup and hair.
I'll stick with weird
adult teeth.
And the mom Patsy was Miss West Virginia in 1977, so they had a pageant background. But
I would have never guessed watching videos.
Yeah. I looked in at the pageant stuff because I was really curious about what happened and the things that I saw. I mean, understandably, the consensus of most experts is that these pageants tend to have negative side effects more than positive side effects. The pageant people argue that it, you know, adds self-esteem and it helps them be able to, you know, the pageant, you know,
confidence
girls give them confidence, et cetera. And that's what the pageant side argues. But all the stuff that I was looking at really says in cases it does, but the sort of uneven, it's like there's sort of, you know, there's three categories of girls that go through the pageants and really just kind of gain neither. And then there's the category of girls that like do come out the other end sort of improved and stronger and whatever.
Yeah.
And then there's the ones that come out kind of chewed up and used up and psychologically damaged.
And anorexia, bulimia,
AKA
all sorts permanent
AKA,
smile wrinkles, big hair for the rest of your life.
Yeah. AKA JonBenet.
Yes. Yeah. And
make it permanently damaged.
So many bad examples. I looked at some of them and it was just really hard to look at. I mean, there's a video, there's tons of videos out there. There's ones where a girl is dressed like a 1950s greaser biker chick and she comes out, you know, and she's wearing a leather jacket and everything. And then when she stops and does her pose, she actually like takes a puff off of a cigarette to look like a greaser. A 4 year old in the UK dressed up in a Hooters outfit and did a dance. There's girls that dance in cages. There's been girls that dance on poles. Women will paint like abs and muscles on the girls with makeups to make them look sexier. Like just kind of disturbing.
Yeah, that is not okay.
And pedo and weird and like it's, I don't know. And I mean, there's the TV shows Toddlers and Tiaras, Honey Boo Boo, like all these things. I mean, they're just, you know, kind of horrible. But in general, they average in age from 2 to 18. Like that's the age range we're talking. I can't imagine a pageant with 2-year-olds really being much more than them barely being able to walk across the stage.
Yeah.
At what age do you start walking?
Like 6 months in my case.
Okay.
Brad's so advanced. How did he do that? No, you did not walk at 6 months.
I think I walked at nine. I know.
Your mom was 13.
I bet Steve walked at seven.
What? So. At what age did you start punching babies?
Right out the womb.
Okay.
Right out of the womb. There's another baby across the room, and I remember squarely punching him in the eyeball.
My daughter walked at 9 months. Yeah.
Yeah. But nine months to a year is.
So age 2 to 18, they usually have evening wear, casual wear. Sometimes they have debates. Sometimes they have debates. They have what they call sports wear, which is AKA a 2-piece outfit.
Bathing suit.
Yeah, Brad has shown me horrifying pictures.
They are horrifying.
Look like dolls.
And then there's usually a talent portion as well. the stats on it are all over the place. Like, I couldn't find stats that lined up in any way of how many there are.
Is there a monetary reward at some point in time?
Do you get
a modeling contract or something?
Well, no, you get a, like, everyone pays in to enter the pageant.
Yeah, there's a purse.
There's a purse at the end. So you win money and prestige and the chance to go on to bigger ones and win even more money.
But the goal being that, what, you're going to be a model at some point or something, possibly?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I read one. It was a Guardian article, which means it was from the UK, and it said that the average price of admission for a pageant was £200.
Right. That's a lot.
Which is
It'd be about $350. Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
And then it said that for that, the average purse that you win was £2,500.
Oh, that is a lot.
So
but what goes into these girls? And I mean, it is creepy to look at the pictures of these women.
And
yeah, it's creepy. Because they look like mini versions of women.
Yes, they do.
And that's the scary part.
And they shouldn't, because they're little girls.
No, they're 6 and 5 and 2 and, you know, even a little bit older. And, I have 2 daughters, and I just would not want to put them through that. Like,
no.
And you have child predators and all this stuff. Like, it just makes it worse.
No, it does.
Like,
it's
horrible.
I was wondering how many there were, and good luck. I mean, I read probably 6 different articles and stats. One of them said that annually there are 4,000 in America. I tended to read that there was somewhere between 4,000 and 6,000 a year in America, different pageants. And I read one article, which I think was wrong, that said there were 100,000 in America, which can't be. I mean, like,
pageants.
Studying this last night made me so nervous that my daughter wanted to know if she could stay the night at someone's house. And I called her. I was like, I'm not just doing this during text. I'm going to give her like a little dad talk, because I was so nervous. I was like, poke somebody in the eye, scream, run, knock on the next door neighbor's door. Make sure you have your cell phone. Call me immediately. I'll be driving through trees.
And don't join a pageant.
Yeah. don't be around any pageant parents.
While you're staying the night, enroll in a pageant.
But I was like, who lives at that house? Is everyone cool? Do you feel safe and comfortable there? Like, turned on like daddy alarms times 10.
Right.
It's tough. You know, anytime your kid goes over and stay, even at families, like, you know, you're
you hear those stories. Yeah.
Well, like usually somebody who molests a child is somebody close and, or abuses a child, not necessarily molest, but abuses a child as somebody close to them, family or a friend. The other thing we talked about though, is in our child parenting episode, where I tell my life story.
Yes.
the stats showed that like kids kidnapping and all that stuff is really not what people think it is.
Right.
It was very low. So, these types of things happening where kids are getting murdered, this is kind of a rare case.
No, it is.
They've said, but these types of things that are happening, yes, kids are dying. Yes, people die. But something like this happening where there's supposedly a home invader and, you know, this tragic thing happened are very rare and few and far between.
Yeah. But I think, you know, I think the media, and again, I think the media really only picked up this case because of the pageant angle, because there was all this, I mean, there's footage. You suddenly have hours of footage of her on stage and all this stuff. So you can
build a rapport with the character. Yeah.
Well, and the family had, they were kind of like a upper echelon in Colorado.
And it's really, it's pre-reality TV too. And we didn't know that instinctively we had that need to want to follow that OJ Simpson kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And during that time, like, you latched onto news things because it was the only form of reality TV you had.
Right, exactly. And so a couple of other stats real quick. My estimate based on the variety of stats I saw was that about 2.5 million girls enter pageants in the US every year. Because I saw a range again, but that was kind of, if you average those ranges, about 2.5 million per year enter. That's a ton. And 72% of them hire pageant coaches that will travel with them, that will, you know, give them benefits and so forth. So it's a big business and there's a lot to it.
So we'll get into JonBenet and the murder in just a second.
This is the world famous Sofa King podcast. Stay tuned and listen to more awesome words.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Sofa King podcast, and today we're talking about the murder of JonBenet Ramsey, the strangeness involving the case, and ultimately leading up to a very interesting and strange conspiracy theory that we're saving to announce later on. But One thing that I did think of, and this says something about, I think, why it was so sensationalized and in the media as much as it was, is I read that in 2013, and again, this murder took place in 1996. So this is, you know, a 20-year-old murder case at this point. But in 2013, French Parliament made it illegal in France to have pageants for girls. Anyone under 16 cannot be in any sort of a pageant. Smart. In France. There's a $40,000 fine for anyone who tries to encourage it or host one or enter one.
Oh, that's no joke. That's France. Worse than littering.
No, it's no joke.
But they can drink wine at like yeah.
But no,
they're
and
cool.
This, I mean, to me, it's part of the point, because the French said that they said that there's a risk for hypersexual young girls. And they yeah. say that sexualized prepubescent girls in France has raised fears that their pageants would take on the quality of American pageants.
Ooh.
And I just really want to state that, I mean, if you haven't looked at photos and videos of these things,
yeah.
they're kind of disturbing. And like when the French, notoriously the world's most openly sexual country,
yeah, yeah.
ban something because it hypersexualizes girls, you really might want to take a look yeah. at what it's, I mean,
yeah.
so I mean, when you
well,
see,
that's something I mentioned in the first segment yeah. is that it, you look at these girls, I mean, just Google child pageant, and the pictures that you see are just, especially if you have daughters, like you're really, or kids at all, or I guess not, like you just see these kids and you're like, that's wrong. Like right. what they're doing is over the top and ridiculous.
I just like how they said, they didn't want to end up like America.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, that's nobody wants to end up like America.
No.
So,
but the fact of the matter is a country that's known for its sexual openness
yeah. the
bans
kiss,
these
you know?
Because it's too sexually yeah. open. I mean, we have everything from,
well, they're sexually open with adults, but yeah,
exactly.
not child
exactly.
predators.
But they're like, but it's disturbing. And I think again, that disturbing nature is why it was such a big deal. Cause I think a lot of people in America hadn't seen girls dolled up to look like women, yeah. to try to look sexy in full adult makeup, high heels, the whole deal, evening dresses. Like yeah. no one had seen that until they saw the footage of JonBenet Ramsey. I know I hadn't. That was the first time I'd really seen that happen.
Yeah.
And then I think it was just extra shocking.
And now we have wonderful reality TV shows about it.
God.
I never watched it. I saw the commercial for that.
Have any of you seen it? I never have. I've seen the previews.
Oh, man.
And that's enough.
Yeah.
I refuse to watch that stuff. No. Like, it is absolutely ridiculous.
No. But so the JonBenet Ramsey murder took place on December 26th, the day after Christmas, in 1996. And so apparently what went down is in the morning – they discovered that JonBenet was missing.
They were on their way. They were going out of town. So she got up early or something to pack. Yeah.
And apparently the night before, this according to the parents' story, they didn't notice that she was missing. And they didn't notice that there was a letter that was probably already on the stairs because it was dark out and they were going upstairs to go to bed or whatever. But they're really wealthy and it's apparently a pretty massive house because the basement has multiple rooms in it and all this stuff. But anyway, so there's I didn't know, but there was a ransom letter that yeah. was found. You can see the full image of it online and so forth. But there's a ransom letter, 2.5 pages, handwritten, sitting on the stairs when they wake up in the morning and their daughter, 6 years old, is missing. Okay. So I want to read the letter because I think it sets up some interesting things to talk about in the course of it. So the letter says, "Mr. Ramsey, listen carefully, ! We are a group of individuals that represent a small foreign faction. We do respect your business, but not the country that it serves." And remember, he's working for a place that ultimately works for Lockheed Martin, so a government defense.
I think
contract.
It was later acquired.
Later acquired, but
you
that was
definitely do the whole thing in a Liam Neeson voice. So
I don't have.
Okay,
that
go ahead.
I have no Liam Neeson, or I would.
Listen, dear Mister. Listen here, Mister She.
So. I mean, if it was acquired by Lockheed Martin, that's probably the type of businesses
right.
they were already dealing with.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, so and this letter starts off saying we have some problems with your foreign dealings. Right.
Yes.
At this time, we have your daughter in our possession. She's safe and unharmed. And if you want to see her, you must follow our instructions to the letter. Or I'm sorry, if you want her to see 1997, because this is the very end of 1996, if you want her to see 1997, follow our instructions to the letter. You will withdraw $118,000 from your account. And that wasn't just a random number. That number was actually the amount that he got as a Christmas bonus,
right?
Like a week or so earlier. Yeah. That was
apparently super close to that amount. Yes. Yeah.
You will withdraw $118,000 from your account. $100,000 will be $100 bills. The remaining $18,000 will be in $20 bills. Make sure that you bring an adequate size attaché to the bank. When you get home, you'll put the money in a brown paper bag. I'll call you between 8 and 10 a.m. tomorrow to instruct you on delivery. The delivery will be exhausting, so I advise you to be rested. If we monitor you getting the money earlier, we might call you early to arrange an earlier delivery of the money and hence earlier delivery of the pickup for your daughter. Any deviation of my instructions will result in the immediate execution of your daughter. You will also be denied her remains for proper burial. The two gentlemen watching over your daughter do not particularly like you, so I advise you do not provoke them. Speaking to anyone about your situation, such as the police, FBI, etc., will result in your daughter being beheaded. If we catch you talking to a stray dog, she dies. If you alert bank authorities, she dies. If the money is in any way marked or tampered with, she dies. You will be scanned for electronic devices, and if any are found, she dies. You can try to deceive us, but we warn that we are familiar with law enforcement countermeasures and tactics. You stand a 99% chance of killing your daughter if you try to outsmart us. Follow our instructions and you stand a 100% chance of getting her back. Then it ends. You and your family are under constant scrutiny as well as the authorities. Don't try to grow a brain, John. You are the only fat cat. You are not the only fat cat around, so don't think that killing will be difficult. Don't underestimate us, John. Use that good Southern common sense of yours. It is up to you now, John. Victory, and it's signed SBTC. And that's the ransom note that is found on the stairs that morning.
So, really weird. Grow a brain, really John. Weird. Like, they went into Die Hard, like, weird. There were quotes from movies in there. Apparently, some of that's pulled from Speed.
Oh, that is. Yeah, yeah. There was a quote from Speed in there.
From Speed and from Ransom.
Yeah.
So, there were two lines pulled from movies. There were two misspelled words, which is, like, part of her...
One of them was business, and then one of them... I forget the other one.
Possession, which possession. I had to look up possession. I was like, is that not how you spell possession? I had to look it up.
Possession.
There's a lot of S's in possession.
Which, if they were foreign, like that could be, you know, could be
maybe. So the things that are super notable is it's someone that knows him because they knew John. The amount of
money.
Yeah, they use his name. The Southern comment,
right? This is in Boulder, Colorado.
Yeah.
Yes,
but he's from Atlanta, Georgia. So the fact that they say use Southern. Your good common Southern sense, you know that this person is from the South.
Not the only fat cat. It's kind of a personal weird stab, like you think you're better than me kind of thing. The misspelled words, though, the reason it's important is because they tried to they think the main suspect is going to be the mom. They think that the mom wrote this letter immediately. And one of their defenses is like, oh, she knows how to spell business and possession. Did she like misspell those things on purpose? But there's some really cool, what's it called? A disposition where they interview the mom and they show handwriting comparisons.
Yeah.
And they compare handwriting. Did you guys see any of that?
Yes.
I read a reference to it.
I watched the whole thing. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it's cause I love the romanticism of the conspiracy theory and like want it to be like something like that, but they compare the letter I, letter
B,
O, letter
O,
B, and they
T.
are, there's little subtleties that look just like weird little things.
No,
like
the L O,
and the I and
the O was exactly the same.
That weird
the
bump B, on the O.
The B was, it was like a little whipped cream come up on the O where it starts and finishes. And the B was exactly the same.
And it's hard
to
discern.
The S was exactly the same.
Yeah, it's hard to discern her behavior from like
a whipped cream come up.
Well, it's like, you know, like a little, Hershey's Kiss on the top of the O where the pin
starts.
Yeah, there's
some very distinct things in the handwriting that are very notable that do look very, very similar. And I don't think it's even a reach. It looks like her handwriting.
No, they said they pretty much couldn't say that she didn't write the letter.
Right.
It was that to the point where it matched up so well, they couldn't say she didn't do it.
So it matched up enough to make her a suspect, but not enough for them to fully say, yes, she wrote it.
That was the only evidence.
A bunch of, yeah. So yeah. they, Brad's throwing me off. The weird part about her behavior was that the way she answered the questions, and I think it's because she was under legal advice to answer a certain way because her attorney's sitting next to her, but they literally show her pictures and they say, do you identify this picture? Do you recognize this picture? Yes. Do you recognize anyone in the picture? Yes, I see JonBenet. And it's like a Polaroid that she probably took that she wrote like 1986 birthday party on the bottom. And they're like, do you recognize that handwriting? She's like, no, I do not. They're like, is that your handwriting? I can't tell. It doesn't look like it. It looks sloppy.
Yeah.
And so she denies all these articles that have her handwriting on it, because obviously it would be like an admission of a comparison of similarity.
Yeah, they show her like a birthday card to her husband, like that says, I love you so much. Da, like, da, da, da.
You know that that's your Polaroid that was in your shoebox of your kids from that birthday party, and that you wrote that.
And this is the other, like they did the same thing to the husband, and they show him the Polaroid and he looks at it and they're like, can you identify anybody in that picture? And he's like, yeah, I think I can make out two of them. One of them's your daughter.
Right.
Like, you think you can make out two of them?
Yeah, they answer it very strangely. And then the other thing is that the misspelling of the two words was like the husband's defense. Like, she would never misspell. She doesn't write that sloppy. They misspelled business and possession. But when they advise that odd line of make sure you take an appropriately sized attaché case to the bank, that they put the hyphen over the E on attaché and spelled attaché. I couldn't spell possession until I Googled it.
Yeah,
but I definitely wouldn't put the hyphen on attaché.
Right. Right.
So there's some real odd little tail signs in the letter that make you feel like there's something going on.
Well, there definitely is.
The weird signature of SBTC.
I tried to look up the origin of that, and there was a lot of speculation, but I didn't find anything solid.
The only thing that I saw was that he, the father, had served at a place called the SBTC, which was the Subic Bay Training Center, which is some sort of a naval station. And he served there from 1968 to 1969.
Okay.
That was the only thing I saw of what SBTC
How about victory?
Might
Did you,
mean.
What's the victory?
Victory,
thing?
I have no idea. Such so a strange letter. There's such weirdness.
So another in huge, the letter. Very, very strange thing about the letters. Her story is that she got up, it was before sunrise, and there's some stuff on Larry King
because she called the police at 5:45 a.m. So she obviously saw,
and they claim to remember nothing now 3 years later.
Yeah, this is the crazy thing about that too, is that she supposedly woke up, supposedly found the letter, all this stuff, right? Well, then they ask her if she read the letter, and she's like, well, not all of it.
Yeah.
You didn't
says,
read the
Don't
whole letter?
Don't contact authorities. She immediately calls the police and calls like four friends
calls
for
like
support.
Friends and family, yeah.
Really strange. Because if you read that letter, you'd be scared. Like, what do we do?
This is before waking her husband.
But this is my big problem with it, is that she picked up
the letter.
Oh, she
hadn't waked her husband up yet? Leah, I just want to get everything in order. Get the coffee made.
Yeah.
Call some people.
They grab
then
the letter.
I'll wake her up and tell her the daughter's.
She says she grabs the letter, runs upstairs to her daughter's room, finds that she's missing, gets her husband, shows her husband the letter. They both read the letter. Then they call the police.
Yeah.
And there is a 911 call, and she does sound genuinely frantic on the 911 call, which is to her benefit. However, when the investigation examines the ransom letter,
right,
there are zero fingerprints on the letter.
Yeah.
They could not pull a print of any sort off of the letter that she apparently found at the bottom of the stairs that someone set there. She picked it up, ran upstairs, handed it to her husband. They both handled it, went back down.
Yeah.
The cops probably looked at it. I don't know. There was no fingerprints pulled off of that letter.
And the thing about the letter is the letter was written on a notepad that was in the house. It was actually their notepad using their pen. The pen that wrote the note was put back into the little thing that was holding the rest of the pens and pencils.
And I would have to imagine if you're going to plan a kidnapping that requires a bank drop and all these things of not contacting the police, and you're going to behead somebody, and you have all this plan, that for one, there's not scratched out stuff in your letter, because a couple words were like marked out and reworded or something, and misspellings, that you would bring your own letter.
Yeah, you're not going to want to take the time to look for paper and grab a pen like, while you're kidnapping the daughter.
The FBI.
Like, you're going to find an old Harbor Freight ad in a Sharpie, and you're like, oh, this will do.
The FBI said that there was never a case in the history of kidnapping or ransom that a letter was produced at the scene.
Right.
Right.
And the weird thing about it is that they used the notepad, and there was multiple versions. They counted the papers, I guess.
Like
and
page 20.
There was page like 17 through 20 were missing. And then there were some other pages missing. And then they started writing a few words and tore those out. And they could tell by the impressions in the notepad.
Right.
So it was a really weird, really weird thing that happened
around that ransom letter. That's just the first thing too.
So yeah,
that's red flag number one. Weird.
Yeah. And the other thing was because they thought that they were looking at a kidnapping. The house was never taped off as a crime scene. Right. For one, partially because the family had, because of who they were, they didn't want to alert anybody or alarm anybody and have a crime scene tape out in front.
Right.
Family members, police officers, themselves were able to walk around the home.
So let's talk about that. They called the police. And yeah. I would think when you say my daughter has been kidnapped, I thought immediately if it's a kidnapping, like local authorities show up. But I thought like the FBI gets involved like when there's a kidnapping. I don't think they just send one uniformed cop out there. It seems very strange.
That doesn't seem strange to me because they would be the quickest people to respond to the scene.
Right.
Even if you were getting another agency
the
involved,
first person
you would,
show up.
The
yeah.
first person to show up is going to be a cop because there's going to be a patrol near the house already right. anyway. You would send a black and white.
They send out someone and it's Linda Ardent. It's like A-R-D-N-T. It's mm-hmm. hard to pronounce. And she, I watched an interview with her and it is creepy. Like she is like mortified. It is creepy. She is the one person to look at for sure. She showed up fresh on the scene and the reporter interviewing the police officer, Linda, said, how was the father when who answered the door? It was the father. How would you describe his behavior? She said, cordial. She said, what do you mean? She's like, cordial. She's like,
hi, officer, come on in.
Yeah. She said, different people react differently to that type of situation. And she's been involved in other situations yeah. like that. And she can't judge them to say that they didn't react the way I would react. But she definitely made note that it felt very odd. She would not react that way. She thinks that most people would not be.
And we talked about this in the Sandy Hook episode about yeah, there was no emotions. Was yeah.
Cordial. So she enters. They start to tell her. She said notable things is that the mother and father were constantly in separate rooms while she was talking. They were like never in the same room together. She found the father in the kitchen at one point when she walked in, thumbing through his mail, like that was on the kitchen counter, just calmly looking through the PG&E bill and moving through mail. And she was like, that's weird, noted. But the thing is, in the ransom note, it stated they were going to call between 8 a.m. and 10 a.m. So they sat there and waited. She contacted, do I have backup? Like, is someone else coming? No one came. Everyone's in meetings. Someone will be there. No one came. 10 o'clock came and went with no notable response from the family. Like, okay, it's yeah. 10 o'clock. They should be calling right now.
Well, nothing. They already called the police.
Chilling on the couch. 10
Did you
o'clock
not read
came
the letter?
Well, I do. I mean, the other thing is, though, that's weird to me is even if they did murder her, this behavior and level of calmness is very strange.
Yeah.
Like if they unless they were true sociopaths.
Cold killers.
Like,
yeah.
But yeah. I mean, but if you murdered your daughter,
the pageant pressure,
and you're trying to cover it up with this ransom note, you would be like sweating bullets and nervous and making up bad lies that don't fit the letter. And you'd be like cracking up.
Yeah.
Like even that, like regardless of whether you did it or didn't do it, that's such a strange
yeah.
behavior pattern.
Well, and one
weird
of the,
after weird.
One yeah. of the biggest things is I remember when I was younger and we lost my sister pretty much in the house and we looked everywhere. There was no mattress unturned
because the point here is her body is in the basement.
Yes,
her dead body while yes. all this is happening is in the basement and yes. no one yeah. has looked. You didn't look in the basement,
ransom note or not, but like while calling the police yes. while the mom's calling the police, I am turning over every yeah. pillow, opening every
everything.
cupboard, every cabinet, every door. Yep. If you have a kid, you know that
yes.
that's the case.
Right. Yes, everything's coming out. I mean,
crazy.
So, yeah, that's one of the biggest things I didn't understand.
Separate yourself from the morons. Listen to more on SofaKingPodcast.com. Stay tuned through the break.
Welcome back to the Sofa King Podcast. So before the break, we were talking about basically searching the house. Like if you lost your child, if you woke up, you went into the room, your child, your nephew, whoever.
Especially your six-year-old child. Yeah. Like, you know where they're at yeah. all times.
Yeah.
I mean, if I don't have kids, if my neighbors knocked on my door in a panic and they said my daughter's missing.
Yeah, we're trashing their house.
Like, I'm going to either help trash their house. I'm going to trash my house.
Yeah.
Looking to, like, I.
Backyard.
Why would my daughter, yeah. you know, why would my neighbor's kid be in my, I have no idea, yeah. but I'm going to check the yard.
Yeah.
I'm going to check my house. I mean, and that's not even my freaking kid.
Yeah. And if you have a dog house, I'm looking in it. You know what I mean? Like, I anything guess, that can like, be in or you under. Didn't
think to go to the wine cellar.
I guess their alibi is like, oh, we got a note. She's not here. Like, someone took her, and they immediately accept that. But I would be like, no, this is a cruel joke. It has to be wrong. Look anyway.
And even
the other thing was too with the note, they didn't even obviously read the whole thing. Like, I mean, the mother even says that 3 years later.
There were no fingerprints on it.
Yeah, they say that she's like, did you read the entire letter? And she's like, no, not the whole thing. And I'm thinking, like, if you're interviewing me about my daughter 3 years later after she was murdered. Just mentioning her name and talking about the scenario where I find her wrapped in a blanket, dead.
You're still upset.
I think a lot of
their responses, like the way that they respond, maybe not their behavior, but the actual responses are probably heavily influenced from legal advice.
Yes.
But just thinking
about your child that died.
Yeah.
You would have some sort of.
I mean, like, maybe though, after being on Larry King and CNN and in the news and on every tabloid, like, maybe you're just numb and it's drilled through at this point, and you're like auto responding. My attorney said I didn't read the letter.
Maybe
I don't know what time I
woke up.
But
they did it.
I can't remember.
They did it from the very beginning.
Right.
You know.
No.
And even I mean, as the investigation went from, you know, skipping ahead, and we'll come back, but skipping ahead a couple of years, as the investigation would bounce from organization to organization, as different law enforcement groups were looking into this, like, so many people later on were like, this entire investigation was botched. Not only did they not seal off the crime scene,
yes,
which we already mentioned,
is huge,
but how come the cop that got called at 5:45 in the morning and sat there till at least 10
right.
waiting for this ransom call, how come that cop didn't check the whole house? Why didn't that cop look anywhere else? That cop didn't go in the basement and find a dead body? Like, that cop,
once,
like,
again, probably just ransom letter. Oh, not here, and was waiting for the phone call based off of whatever instruction. But you would think so. At that point, 10 o'clock comes and goes. No one calls. Then she does an odd thing. She instructs them to search the house and look for anything odd or out of place, which I could see that, because they would recognize something like, oh, that's weird. That bike was clearly hanging up in the garage, right, not over there. So she instructs them to look for anything odd. And it's like a neighbor. It was John Ramsey and a neighbor or something. She tells, hey, go look for anything out of place. He goes straight to the basement. She says, look for anything out of place, but don't touch anything, are actually her instructions. He goes to the basement, finds her dead, wrapped in a white blanket, and carries her upstairs.
Before that, though, this is the really weird part about that. Before that, they tell him, look for anything out of place. So what did they find out of place? A suitcase under a window that's open with broken glass and a mark on the wall. That, John says,
I may have broken
that glass last summer or something like that. I may have done it. I don't remember.
And you're rich and live in a fancy house and you didn't fix
it. Your window's open. The window's open, though, right? The window's open. And there's a suitcase beneath it, like somebody climbed in the window.
Your window are open on December 26th in Boulder, Colorado.
Listen though, you didn't. That right there shows to me that you didn't search your house for your kid.
No.
And then they go down, find the body.
He carries her up and
Touch anything though.
Yeah, don't touch anything. Mm-hmm. He picks up the body, carries it upstairs. And as he comes upstairs, she sees him and rushes over to him. He sets her on the floor and asks if she's dead. The officer says, yes, she's dead. Call 911. And she said immediately, they were face to face, like inches away. She said she got like cold chills, pit of her stomach, scared for her life. She said she immediately accounted for how many bullets she had in her clip and how many bullets she had in her gun, because she was like, oh my God, like it all added up to her. She said she's not allowed to say anything, but she said she feared for her life, immediately recounted how many bullets she has and how long would it take for backup to get
there. Because you're in the presence of murderers.
That she's all by herself and there's people here that probably murdered their daughter. That's what she alluded to. She couldn't say it for legal reasons.
One of the issues I had with this whole thing was that there are multiple detectives, multiple investigations, and all of them have different scenarios and outcomes. Like, they don't all start in the same place. They don't all end in the same place. And one of them that I really liked, though, was a detective talking about the actual scenario that he thinked happened.
The thought, bedwetting?
Well, no. Part of it was the bedwetting. So like she, JonBenet wet the bed. She was in the turtleneck that she was in the night before. Didn't change or anything. Like she fell asleep in the car or whatever, wet the bed, which they had proof that she did wet the bed a lot because there was a plastic mat down. There were stains on the sheet and mattress. And so she got up to go to the bathroom and, for whatever reason, he thinks that the mom was actually up, and was in the bathroom with her. But they also said about, there was, allegations of sexual assault. There was DNA found in her underwear. He said he didn't think that she was actually sexually assaulted. He think that,
the autopsy concluded that she was never raped.
Yeah. And so this was his idea was that, she was actually physically wiped so hard, like her vagina was, messed up, I guess.
Like
I
don't the know. Mom lost her control.
Yeah, the mom
and temper.
Yeah, and so his idea was that the mom lost her control, lost her temper, and actually something happened where JonBenet hit her head on the tub.
Yeah, like mommy dearest, like freaked out. You wept the bed again, wiped her so vigorously and hard, and then accidentally did something to either hit her or but it's like that impact. It was like the hard. Officer recounts from the autopsy, and this is just horrible to even think about. She witnessed the autopsy. They peeled her scalp back to reveal the fracture, and it was an 8-inch fracture the length of the side of her skull.
Yeah, like
the
entire smashed. Side of her
skull was broken.
But then, she was also strangled.
Right.
Well, this happens afterwards. So what and I'm going off the officer's account, the detective, he says that after that, her heart rate went so low that the mother probably thought she was dead. So now she has to figure out a way to make this look like an accident. And everything that was used was from the home. She had an art kit that was nearby. Right. They had a broken paintbrush that she wrapped a cord around to use it to strangle her.
Which someone said, the knot used, you had to have special knowledge of knots. Though.
The knot was actually a sophisticated knot. Yeah.
Garrison knot or something it was called. I can't remember.
Which makes sense. You have the HBSC or whatever it is, the naval SBCT, the naval bank or naval bank
would imply not knowledge,
not knowledge. Yeah. So that kind of goes hand in hand.
Once again, unprepared, didn't bring your own weapon. Like,
yeah. Yeah. You came, you know, right. You came and you cased the house and now you're using a paintbrush and some string from an art kit that the mother had.
And her wrists and her mouth were covered in duct tape.
Yes. After they found this, it was after the fact that she was choked because she didn't die of strangulation. And there was blood underneath the duct tape, which was put on afterwards, they said. And there was no indications of tongue marking like you would do if somebody put duct tape on your mouth. You'd try and push it with your tongue. So there was a bunch of different weird things that went on. And also just wrapping the body nicely and putting them with their favorite nightie was a really weird thing. And most times in cases of murder, somebody who murders you outright in cold doesn't care how you lie.
Right, unless you're like some fetishist
unless it puts a lotion on its skin.
Right. Yeah, so that was one of the weirdest things. Like it was somebody who was close to her, somebody who cared about her.
But then the immediate weirdness right there is so much for this ransom letter. Like if someone did
she's no dead
one.
Already.
It's like someone wasn't hiding in the basement with your daughter and then found out you called the cop and strangled her and then snuck out the back door.
Yeah.
Like if you would have they would have found her body in a ditch a month later.
Yeah.
If she had been abducted and killed by people because they called the police.
Yeah.
Not dead in the basement already. That makes no sense.
Unless it was a super inexperienced person trying to pull it off. That's writing silly.
Yeah. But this note though, didn't
with
seem
speed
that
quotes
way.
And like, you know what I mean? Quotes.
Yeah.
Quotes from 90 movies, like popular 90s movies that have to do with hostages and ransoms.
But the other weird thing was the mother. She was still in her turtleneck that she had on the night before, in her dress that she had on the night before.
Oh, I didn't see
that. Had makeup on and her hair done from the night before. Was never...
that's because she was an ex-pageant queen.
Yeah,
she doesn't want to be ugly when she sleeps. She
this was the theory that she never went to bed.
Right.
And that's where the detective really got into it because he said she never went to bed. She had this rage. I guess it was she would get upset at, you know, JonBenet, you know, often. And one of the things was that, they had a fight. the night before, and JonBenet didn't want to wear the same matching clothes that her mother wanted her to wear. She, all the time, they would match. The mother would match with JonBenet. Wear matching clothes.
Stepford wives. Well, weird.
It's very pageant.
Yes.
You know, I mean,
well, the mother is obviously living vicariously through their child. Absolutely. I mean, it's not about her child. It's about her.
So that
was the weird, I mean, it's so weird. Everything that I watched, there was different accounts and different detectives had different things. There was another one where she was sitting at the dinner table and somebody came up behind her and hit her with something. So it didn't happen in the bathroom. So how is that you bust your head on the tub and there's no blood? Right. You know, there's no leftover DNA. They actually found
Somebody wiped fingerprints off paper. So they were trying to do something.
In 2008, the mother died in 2006 of cancer. Yeah. In 2008, they were exonerated because they found a third party DNA in the underwear.
Right.
Of JonBenet.
Well, and why is the killer bleeding on him? They already had the DNA, but it took until 2008 for the technology. Like, they knew that was there,
yeah.
But Boulder didn't have the technology to do that.
Wouldn't somewhere in the world have it, though? Like, you would think that they would.
The original jury.
I think it was just a really small amount, and they didn't. From what I read, it was a very small amount, a really insignificant amount. And at the time, there was not enough technology to do that with that sample size.
And in
2008, the technology finally came around for them to be able to test this. And as soon as the technology was there, they tested it.
And they released some unsealed documents that showed that the court had originally decided to indict the parents on child abuse and like a accessory to murder and whatnot, but the current district attorney would not sign it through.
The Colorado grand jury voted in 99 to indict the parents for murder, and Alex Hunter, the district attorney, refused and said that he still thought there was insufficient evidence to say that they were the murderers.
Well, and part of that was that the crime scene was just obliterated. They did not.
Well, no other cops would show up, though. They left that poor officer there for hours and hours. Then she called it in.
Yeah. The afternoon.
And they had a Q&A on Reddit, I guess. I don't know if you guys saw that with the
No, I didn't.
So basically, Q&A has what's called an AMA or something Ask Me Anything.
AMAs are awesome. If you've never seen an AMA, go to Reddit, look for AMAs. They're really cool.
Yeah. Basically, so
an AMA, you get people, typically famous people or scientists or whoever, and they get on Reddit and they just live time watch questions get posted and they answer questions.
So this happened with Mark Beckner, who is the police chief of Colorado.
I saw him holding
at the time.
Hello Reddit.
Yeah, hello Reddit. At the time, he was a detective. And so he was answering questions on Reddit, I guess not understanding how Reddit worked and that the whole world was going to see it.
Right.
He basically opens up and there's a lot to it. I'm not going to go through everything. If you want, just search Reddit AMA JonBenet, like you can find it. He pretty much just basically says like, no, the crime scene was not handled correctly. The search was not handled correctly. You know, there was inconsistencies with so many things. Like it's really crazy to read.
Do you know if he's one of the ones who quit the case because it was so mismanaged? I had read that two investigators resigned from the case, and they said that the main reasons were the fact that the crime scene was so polluted, the investigation was handled so incompetently, and that three, they said that no one, like everyone, put all of their investigation efforts into looking at the parents.
Right.
So everyone ignored the intruder hypothesis and let a bunch of trails go cold that they shouldn't have done.
Let me tell you guys about Donald Foster real quick before we run out of time. Because it's like Donald Foster is a writing analyst from Vassar College, and he doesn't analyze like handwriting. He analyzes like text content, syntax, use of language, source material used in whatever the writings, borrowings, political and religious opinions. But he's really well known. He actually identified an unknown Shakespeare writing, like something was written by Shakespeare and no one knew who wrote it. And he identified it based off of similar usages. Mm-hmm. And he could identify that it was Shakespeare's writing. Also, the FBI hires this guy to prove that Ted Kaczynski wrote the Unabomber Manifesto. So he has a really good portfolio as far as like previous things he's done. But he's best known for proving that Anonymous was actually Newsweek's Joe Klein. He volunteers, he contacts Benet, the mom, and says, I will volunteer, because he was so interested in the case, to prove that you didn't write this ransom letter.
Yeah.
So he volunteers. She does not contact him, but the district attorney does contact him. And he goes through the analysis. The district attorney says, yeah, let's do this. Like, he's volunteering. He did the FBI Ted Kaczynski thing. He's identifying Shakespeare documents. That's right. What this guy does. So they give him all kinds of writings, you know, birthday cards, letters that she's written in the past, files from their computer. And he goes through and starts to compare things. And when in the interviews, his response is no comment, no comment, no comment. But in the police report summaries, he identifies her as the author of the letter. And this guy is like Unabomber, yeah. Ted Kaczynski, Shakespeare.
Anonymous. He's legit.
He's the guy that figures this stuff out. And the things that he notes is, some of it seems silly, like the use of exclamation points. They show all these letters side by side of like, she excessively uses exclamation points. The opening of the letter of.
And that's a woman thing to do.
Yeah. Listen carefully. At some point in time, they had like, when the murder happened, they cataloged, took pictures and made note of every title of every book that was in their house. And in like chapter 16 in some book, they found, it's called The Mind Hunter, written by an FBI profiler, John Douglas. In chapter 16, there's a case about a young girl who is kidnapped, sexually assaulted, and murdered. And when the kidnapper calls on the phone, his opening line is, listen carefully. So they connect like that. Wow. Like, I mean, this guy digs in. Yeah. And figures out that the way she wrote this, the words she used here, that she is most likely the author of the letter. But he can't say it, but you can see like, he's like, yeah, I know who wrote.
Well, you can't without a doubt. I mean, like it's one of those things. There is always a slight doubt. And so that's what screws him.
Right.
And Mark Beckner, one of the Reddit things was about, whether or not there might've been an intruder the night of the murder. What he says is most investigators do not believe, and this is most, do not believe that there was a legitimate point of entry. There was a guy named Lou Smith, who was an investigator, who always believed the basement window, which we talked about, that was open, broken. There was a briefcase under it, or a suitcase under it, excuse me. He believed that that was the point of entry, but there was no dust. And the spider webs were undisturbed. So, or I'm sorry, the dust and the spider webs were undisturbed on that window.
So
seal.
They just broke the window and opened it.
Yeah. So it was from the inside that happened. I mean, everything is so strange about this case that it leads you back to, it was somebody on the inside, but then they were never able to actually pin it on the person. I honestly think it was the mother. I mean,
and then ultimately, when the DNA did come back and they did it to the FBI's CODIS database, it didn't match anyone. No, like nobody in the database was a match.
Yeah.
And it was really strange. That music means that we are out of time, but we still have a lot more to say. So as always, if you're listening on the radio, go to SofaKingPodcast.com, download the episode. If you have downloaded it, stick around. Right after the music, we will finish talking about the conspiracy.
Yes. Don't be a retard.
You've just heard a radio edition of the Sofa King Podcast. To hear an uncut version of this episode or listen to a separate web-only podcast every Tuesday, visit SofaKingPodcast.com or find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or your favorite podcast app. You can reach the Sofa Kings at Sofa King Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd now like to. I can't even
you
do it.
You have to leave it now.
That's the second one. I can't even do it. Can't be a voiceover artist.
In voiceover guy. Yeah. And he messed up and we laughed and then we went back to re-record it and he.
Oh, man.
That was awesome.
That's awesome. That's what you get for trying to edit. We never edit our stuff.
I thought I had it too. And then I realized, like, slowly in my brain, it was catching up. Like, that's not the real word, guy. Stop talking. Here,
just do it. You can do it right now. Go for it.
Ladies and gentlemen, now is your feature presentation.
No, you sound like you sound like Dr. Phil announcing a movie. Feature presentation,
what
Dr.
The fuck
Phil.
Are you talking about?
That's what
Brent.
You sounded like them.
My name is Bill Clinton.
That's horrible.
And I'd like to fuck your wife.
That's the best Bill Clinton I've ever heard.
No.
In my dick.
What?
With her face.
Brad's just taking advantage of the uncensored time.
He is, yeah. As soon as the radio ends, he likes to throw out some uncensored stuff. So we still haven't gotten to the conspiracy theory, which is fucking awesome.
Wait, what are you talking about? I threw out uncensored stuff in the beginning of the show.
Yeah, that's true. And I realized that we teased this conspiracy an episode or two ago. We mentioned it, but if you didn't catch it, then you won't know what's coming. But we still have a little bit to say about the investigation, because the investigation's fucking weird. I mean, all the, you know, all the signs. And again, it keeps going. I mean, in the 2000s, they started to get different DNA evidence. In 2013 is when they were able to unlock the sealed files.
Yeah.
In 2008 is when they extracted the DNA that was on JonBenet's underwear. But they did confirm it was not the father.
It was a third party.
It was a third party male.
And this is my conspiracy theory is that it was the mother and somebody else, like maybe she had a boyfriend or maybe there was another person involved, but I think she was involved with somebody else. And
the husband knows for sure. He just doesn't want any part of it.
The husband, I'm for sure, because they would probably delve in and say that he knew all along and he would be screwed.
I don't know why they didn't just ask us. Murder solved. Done.
Murder solved.
There were also something notable.
I'm still confused.
But
about
if it was something, again, pure hypothesis and speculation. But I mean, if it was like the mother and some other person, and there was an affair involved or something, that might speak to the fact that the cop said that they refused to sort of be in the same room as each other.
Yeah.
Like, you crazy bitch, you just killed my daughter. I don't want to see you get the electric chair, so I'm going to try to cover you.
But yeah, and maybe there was
even look you in the face.
And maybe there was a fight over the money, like what the dad was going to do with the money, and so the mom wanted the money to run away with her new boyfriend or whatever, you know, like there's a whole
fresh conspiracy daily with Brad.
That's so right. We knock him out,
made a new one. Yep. I wanted to note that there were 100 burglaries in the months leading up to that in their neighborhood.
Yep.
Which makes it's a nice neighborhood. That's probably more common, but the thing that I thought was crazy
it's Christmas time.
Yeah.
You're gonna
burgles are up.
Tis the season to be burgled.
They had 38 registered sex offenders living within 2 miles, which I thought was like,
that's a
bunch of rich creeps. Like, they live in a super fancy neighborhood. 2 miles is still that neighborhood.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're into that crazy stuff, like you're bored with your life and you have good money, like you're just, now you're into kids. Like,
I already bought a boat. Might as well fuck a kid.
Yeah. Really, Brent? Is that how you think?
I think it's the natural progression of wealth.
Yeah.
You know, mansion, boat, fuck a kid.
Yeah.
Man. I mean,
Look at my name is Elmer J. Fudd, millionaire. I own a mansion and a yacht, but he hadn't yet.
Yeah. I mean, look at Michael Jackson. It happens.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't often say offensive things, but I go big when I go.
Yeah, you do.
All right.
You say offensive things all the time.
I made myself uncomfortable. I'm just going to be quiet for the rest of the episode.
So is there anything else about the investigation that you would want to point? And again, that idea that there were 100 burglaries, all these criminal activities right there in that neighborhood in the immediate months before, there were 38 sex offenders. This is one of the reasons that those investigators resigned from the case, because they were upset that no one followed up these leads. I mean, like when there's a murder, they say that you've got 48 hours to really to realistically catch the killer.
In the first 48.
Exactly. And all they looked at were the parents, and they ignored the outside intruder hypothesis. They ignored a friend of the family hypothesis.
Right.
They just looked at the brother. They just looked at the parents. They just looked at all that.
The Ramseys actually hired a third party detective to look at the case himself, non-biased apparently, but they're paying him, so I don't think that's non-biased. But John E. Douglas, former head of the FBI Behavioral Science Unit. Did you guys read about that?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, so he went and did his own investigation, and he basically said there's no physical evidence linking them to the homicide, which I think that's kind of crazy.
Physical evidence?
Yeah. It said,
which that's stupid, because the letter would assume linking the mom to the homicide when the guy says
the thing is, though, about that letter, like, I know a lot of cases have been like flat out like made by hand, like conclusive, this is definitely the same person's handwriting, and they could never say that about this letter. They said there were definite similarities, but the similarities weren't,
I think they did
enough.
Kind of conclude it, but they're like, for legal reasons, they weren't allowed to say it or something weird. I can't remember what I read. They said like it was decided that other people had said that is the handwriting.
I mean, if you saw, I mean, did you see the images of the lettering?
Yeah, I saw the letter.
Like, man, like it was just, and the more they went through her handwriting and what she wrote and lined it up with the letters on the letter.
She'd be like, oh, do these O's look the same? Well, they both have a hole in the middle of them.
Yeah.
The G. That other one's a lot smaller.
They both go to the left.
They're both lowercase.
And the other thing was too, when they had her rewrite the letter, she wrote $118,000 out. Like you would make a check. Not the numbers, 118,000. She would not write the numbers. Like she was purposefully not doing what they asked her. And that'd be the thing. I would be like, no, you're going to write. And the other thing too, you have them rewrite a letter. They're going to not do it correctly.
Right.
I'm so curious about all the evidence, because if the evidence was enough to make the grand jury say, yes, they did it, then why did the DA say, no, the evidence isn't strong enough? And again,
unsettled.
I have to put on my, I have to put on two hats, either the genuine law enforcement hat. And the guy was like, no, this evidence isn't good enough to get a conviction.
Yeah.
Or I put on the political bullshit, like conspiracy theory hat and think you've got this guy who's a big member of the community. He's the president of a big corporation
who might be paying you.
You're the district attorney.
He might have been worried about that the law enforcement botched it so bad that it could come back with some type of legal ramifications.
And that's what I was going to say, is that if the evidence and the crime scene was so just horribly taken care of, it was not done in the right way at all. And all of the investigators say that from the very beginning, the crime scene was not preserved, which was the biggest mistake they could have done. In a court of law, you would have a hung jury probably, and they would get off.
Right.
So why prosecute without stronger
evidence? Millions of dollars and forever.
Yeah. So I could see that happening, and them just saying, no, that's not enough, because all it's going to take is for them to say this one thing and it's done. Like we're screwed.
And that's the district attorney's job. I mean, the district attorney has to say, we're going for this because I think that's what we can win. And, we're going to call it homicide instead of murder because we can't prove murder, but we could prove homicide.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they have to make those decisions knowing the court system to determine what's going to be the most likely outcome based on the budget they have, based on
you put the parents in jail or whatever for killing their daughter, and then comes out in 2008 that there was different DNA. Like, you're screwed. Now you owe them money.
Another factor, by the way, if you are a DA trying to look at the bottom line of what it's going to take, both the company that John Bennett Ramsey worked for, the company's public relations firm, and the company's lawyers were covering him.
Yeah. Right.
So their PR firm was spinning everything in the media in a positive way, and they had a bank of massive lawyers. So even the DA would have been like,
Aaron Brockovich.
They're screwed.
Massive lawyers that are it's going to cost us so much money and take so long, and we're probably still not going to win.
It's like me fighting against Walmart, against slipping and falling or something.
The third party detective that they hired had a couple more points. I'm just summarizing it quick, but he said basically the next point was there was no plausible motive for them to kill their daughter in any way. They had nothing to gain from it, unless they're just trying to be celebrities.
Except
they did
the
like
mom,
attention.
The mom and her boyfriend for $118,000.
The third one was there's no evidence of physical abuse or neglect or sexual molestation or anything like that in the past. And then the last one was that just basically that the behavior of John and Patsy Ramsey after the discovery of the crime, that it was consistent with the behavior of parents that had their child murdered, which I have to disagree with that.
Yeah, I disagree. I don't know. Like maybe I just love my kids more. Like I feel like if my kids died, I know that my life wouldn't be over, but I just don't know how you could go through a normal day, especially day after.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'd be breaking shit, but maybe you just clam up. I hope I never know, but I feel like I'm driving my car through like buildings.
That's all bullshit though, because you see people on the news who lost their kid. You know what I mean? Just after, and they find out and they're just, you can't.
You see the neighbor of someone lost their kid on the news crying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And again, I've got to stick with what the cops say. Realistically, I haven't been around parents when they've lost their kids, and cops have.
Yeah.
So if an investigator says this behavior was creepy and completely unnatural based on all, like,
because that's what the officer said, basically.
You've seen it happen.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
you know the responses and that was not the response, right?
Yeah. I mean, we base stuff off movies we see. You know what I mean? Right. Like that's what we have, but investigators base it off of real life. And that's what was the consensus, was that everything was strange.
Right.
But when you're going after parents who have a PR firm,
right.
And expensive lawyers, like it becomes more difficult. Like,
and
you know, you're
blown up on CNN and you're on the nightly news.
Yeah, because you're the chief of police and you're trying to go after and find a killer, and you're pinning it on these parents. Even if they really were, things could spin around on you real quick to where you're resigning because they're going to dig into your closet and they're going to find your skeletons.
I feel like I wouldn't go on the news. I would just freak out and not, you know, participate anymore. But maybe because you're so worried about looking guilty, you wouldn't do that.
Well, you got to think of the parents, though. Like, they were public figures in their area. You know, they everybody knew who they were.
They're worried about reputation.
They were worried about reputation, which is one of the reasons why the crime scene was handled like it was.
Right.
Was because of the reputation. Yeah. And they were sensitive to that.
I think the theory about an accidental thing, like something happened, mom lost her temper, mommy dearest, she was stressed about going out of town. She's Mrs. like high stress pageant mom.
And if you've seen those things on TV, like they blow up over stupid stuff.
I want to kill someone at Christmas. You know what I mean? Like, she probably just freaked out. Something happened. Like, we got to get ready in the morning, and now you wet the bed. I'm going to have to do this. And just she slipped, hit her head.
But the fact of the matter is, if you freaked out and in an act of rage,
you don't follow it up,
you accidentally killed your child.
This is where I could see that comes in.
The legal end result is probably going to be pretty minimal compared to
writing a ransom letter.
Well, and with a cord, written a fucking ransom letter. You've just made it.
Well, you went from
accidental homicide to fucking
real homicide,
murder one.
To murder. And that's the detective I was talking about actually says that in his interview, that they actually, if it was an accident, the mother could have called the police and said, "Oh my gosh, she fell and I was fighting with her and she fell and hit her head," or something. And the repercussions of that would have been very minimal.
Maybe because she lost her temper. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She just wasn't the right mindset. Well,
think if you were there, think if not even your kid, but you killed somebody, wouldn't trying to get out of it run through your head?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that. What do I do? How do I get, got to get rid of this body? You know,
I cut the carpet.
My whole thing is,
that's what I do.
Keep a roll of carpet. I mean, you always have to have a roll of carpet in your car.
I have 50-gallon drums, a bandsaw, muriatic acid. Yeah.
My trunk is always lined with plastic, so it's good. Yeah. But no, I mean, you have to look at the thing. If somebody was really trying to kidnap a kid, they would have just took the kid and the letter would have came later.
Right. Yes,
exactly. The kid wouldn't have been dead in the basement with the letter that they wrote there on site.
Absolutely not. I mean, I guess there is a chance that the kidnapper showed up, fucking wrote a letter, and then went to kidnap her and then accidentally killed her and then threw her in the basement.
But with her favorite nightie wrapped up all nicely.
And then I accidentally killed her, so I
leave the note anyway.
Then I taped up her mouth and hands after she was dead, strangled her after the head wound, and then covered her in a nice, it doesn't make it, it makes no sense.
And then still left the letter, like they weren't going to find the kid and we're going to call, you know. I don't understand what kidnapper, especially at the level of if they are actual people who have done this before or killed before.
Got two people watching the family, the letter said.
Yeah, the level of sophistication that the letter stated and then what really happened were two completely different things. They were amateurs at best. And so, you know, that's what leads me to believe that I honestly think it was the mother. I can't get away from that because there's no other evidence pointing to anybody else.
But there is evidence pointing to one other thing, which is the awesome conspiracy theory. Are we ready to go into
that? So
this is a surprise to me too, because I actually didn't read about it.
Yeah. So and I'm really wondering, is JonBenet really dead or is she alive?
That's what the conspiracy hints at, that she was never actually killed.
Nope.
And that she is still alive. And that would explain the ransom note and the weird responses of the parents, because they were covering up her child's
fake death.
And the DA would have, of course, said, "We don't have the evidence because there was no body," which may or may not have been discovered. But if you were, Brent, just asking you, if you were going to fake the death of one of your children,
yikes,
why would you do it?
Why would I do it?
Can I answer?
What would be your motivation? What would the end result, 20 years later, what would you hope for your child? Why would you fake your child's murder? To what end 20 years later for your child? You're doing it for the benefit of your child. What is that benefit?
You have to do
it. I would probably, so that they could secretly be reborn as a pop star, is my guess.
Ding, 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 ding. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you
shit.
I know I saw that because it's in every single Facebook feed and headline.
Okay. I give you
the sentence that I know.
Yes.
Yeah. But so I don't know any ladies justification gentlemen, behind it.
We give you JonBenet, Katy Perry.
That is the theory that the character Katy Perry
right.
is actually JonBenet Ramsey.
Yes. And the funny, man, yeah,
is there
looking
any
up
basis
this stuff,
for argument?
Well, no, though. They were saying that the parents kind of look similar. Okay. And like, okay.
Here's the thing. All these articles are based on a video. The video is by a guy named Dave Johnson. He posted on December 18th.
That's a fake name.
Who is really Dave Navarro.
That's right. He posted it December 18th, 2014, but recently it started to get some hits and get popular. There's over 2 million views of it right now. His claim is that she was killed because that would help them develop her fame later so she could become Katy Perry. Yeah. As if that makes any fucking logical sense whatsoever.
It makes sense to me.
It
completely.
Makes no fucking sense. I'm going to act like I killed my daughter so that she's gone so that 20 years later she can rise as a pop star with a completely different name. Why the fuck did you have to act like you killed your daughter? Like, why didn't you just make your daughter a pop star? Like, that makes no sense. It's not like she shows up 20 years later and it's like, it's actually JonBenet Ramsey. Like, now there's fame. Like, no, you made up a new identity.
I think you're thinking of this completely wrong.
Okay.
She was so popular and famous as a child, they had to kill that JonBenet because it would have overtaken the new JonBenet because she could never get away from her childhood.
They had name regret. They're yeah. Like, look, what a weird
look
name.
At, well, look at
John Bennett.
Look at the Olsen twins, right? They couldn't handle their child fame.
Oh, that's true.
You know, so like they took that away from her. They put her in a simple home and raised her as a simple child only to become Katy Perry, who could handle being a pop star.
Right. Because of all of her.
It makes complete sense.
So let me give you a couple of quotes from the video because it's fucking awesome, this video. The video is awesome.
I'm sure childhood pictures of Katy Perry exist that we can compare.
The video
yeah, they look just like JonBenet.
Do they?
No. They look just like fucking Katy Perry.
Right.
The video is awesome. Like the first 2 minutes or so is like a screen capture of some shit.
I want to put
really tell what
Katy Perry the platypus out there to the universe. Go ahead.
It's this guy talking with pictures that he flashes up on the video. The descriptor of the video at the top of YouTube is, and this is from him, this is the description of what this video is you're about to watch. Stop being liars for the system. No bodies died. She is still singing, obviously, in all caps, false death liars are going to burn, count on it. That's the description of the video. So the video itself
seems legit to me.
Seems legit to me. One of the quotes early on, he says, quote, JonBenet Ramsey became Katy Perry. That's a fact. So if any of you continue to lie about this person dying, you are in fact a false witness to murder and death. That's a fact. If any of you told people in the past that this person died, you need to go tell them you were wrong. Otherwise, you are still a liar and a false witness to death.
Why didn't we have this guy on the show?
I'm pretty sure that guy is Dwight Schrute.
Then he says,
who?
Dwight Schrute from the office. Fact. Katy Perry.
No, he keeps saying like throughout the whole video, that's a fact. That's a fact. He keeps saying that's a fact. And he keeps saying you are a false witness. Like those are his two catchphrases.
He says it personally. You can see the guy saying it?
No. It's just his voiceover.
Oh, okay.
It's
just his God, voiceover. I wish I could see him. He's Dwight Schrute.
Then he says a little bit later on, they produce. This makes no fucking sense. This is some of his evidence of what happened. They produced this Masonic play. They hoaxed the death of their daughter through strangulation, which if you understand the Jewish idea that you must stay away from a strangled meats, therefore, how would somebody sacrifice someone by strangling them?
What?
That's his logic.
And is the whole internet thing based off this guy?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Weird.
There's one other guy that's an offshoot of this guy. But and then the rest of the video, he proceeds to take and it gets really it's so awful. He like in the middle of the video, he's talking. There's pictures of JonBenet's parents. There's pictures of Katy Perry's parents. He keeps saying, look, it's the exact same person. It looks nothing fucking. They look nothing alike.
The issue with this. Well, the issue with this is that. People will say like, oh, look, that guy looks like Sean Connery. And you're like, no, that doesn't look like Sean Connery. No. As people can't tell other people apart.
He's one of a kind.
Again, I look back at the Challenger disaster episode that we did. I went in there waiting to hear people say,
yeah,
these two people look alike. And I was like, they're not going to fucking look alike. And no, they look exactly they look alike.
Yeah. That, I was this, thinking that the whole no, time. They looked look alike.
Nothing like each other.
Yeah.
And right. he'll do this slow fade of a picture of like JonBenet Ramsey. And
morph it.
And it doesn't even morph it. He just fades one in and the other one out until they're both halfway opaque and sort of blurring over each other's features. I could do it with fucking
Oprah.
Adolf Hitler yeah. and the guy that works at Albertsons. And in the middle, when you can only see half of both, you'd be like, yes, they are both human males.
That guy sold me chicken strips.
Yeah. But here's the
thing. No, I have to agree. The parents don't
look anything. No, they don't look anything alike. So, but he does it. And the thing is, in the middle of the video, it's like him talking. He's talking. You know, that's a fact. That's a fact. You're a false witness. And then all of a sudden he says, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and start to merge these. And all of a sudden, out of fucking nowhere, this loud audio track of God Bless America starts playing as the as the fade happens.
And I think this guy is trolling the whole internet.
I finally realized it's actually JonBenet Ramsey singing God Bless America.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's
And then it fades into Katy Perry singing.
And then it fades into that 50-50 face. And then he does the same thing with the dad. And it's like, at least with the Katy Perry JonBenet thing, it's like JonBenet's cheeks don't match. Like there's some things that don't quite match, but the nose doesn't look anything like the same nose.
Well,
but when you look at the parents, the dad, JonBenet's dad, has like this big honker that's kind of crooked and weird looking. And like Katy Perry's dad just has a fucking nose. Like, yeah, maybe he had plastic surgery. There's nothing. There's nothing at all. And my favorite thing ever was when and shit gets weird. And all of a sudden, as soon as the two pictures merge, you guys have to watch this video. As soon as the two pictures merge, like this angry looking speech bubble in white gets added on top of the picture.
It's an angry speech bubble.
It's like sharp. It's jagged and sharp. Yeah.
Like a Batman
bubble.
Pow.
Like a pow coming out of the mouth. And in all caps, it says hoax. It's so
like he's joking.
No, like to prove like once the pictures are merged, that's supposed to really be an exclamation point. That what a
does he have a whole channel? Because I want to watch some other.
I think
ones.
He does have a whole channel.
Yeah. So a simple search of Katy Perry as a child, picture search reveals Katy Perry as a child, and she looks nothing like.
No, she looks nothing. And let's also look at the fact that Katy Perry is 31 and JonBenet Ramsey would be 25. But my favorite thing ever was
there's a lot of Hispanics that come from Mexico that have that same issue though. So that you can't really go off that.
You're saying fake ID.
You got two birthdays.
Oh, I see. So my favorite thing in the bottom is one of the users who chime in on YouTube said, quote, I would like to know this guy's thoughts on Tupac faking his death and becoming Barack Obama. Which I thought was awesome.
But I think, is he Ben Carson or Barack Obama? That'd be good.
I think he looks a little bit more like Ben Carson.
I don't know.
Maybe they're closer in age.
Maybe.
I don't know. But no, the video that all this thing is based on, I encourage you guys to watch it. It's horrible. It's so poorly produced. It's such a piece of shit. It's like
you should taste this milk. It tastes like shit. I think it's like, rotten.
Eat these cheese chips from Brazil. They taste like shit.
That's a fact.
Rex, those chips are good.
And I do want to say, just because, as he said, I want to apologize to both of you and the entire audience for saying that JonBenet was killed. Because I don't want to be a liar and a false witness to
right.
that. So I, for one,
and you're taking that back.
Extend my apologies.
Yeah, I'm sorry too.
We got to give a real time shout out right now. Someone just tagged all of us during the podcast. It was someone that I just saw, like they made paleo breakfast this morning on Instagram and liked their photo. And I asked what it was. Dave can't have it. It's eggs wrapped in sausage. It's pretty cool looking, but it's Big Nitty Smitty. apparently, since a couple hours ago when I was drinking coffee and commenting on a photo, listen to the podcast and just gave us a shout out. It says, quick shout out to my new favorite podcast at Sofa King Brad, at Sofa King Brand, at Sofa King Podcast, wait, is Dave in there? Wait, Sofa King Brad? Uh-oh, Dave.
That's messed up.
She double Sofa King podcasted. I think she tried to do Dave and it didn't
happen.
Well,
he's not as popular as us on Instagram. That's okay. Not yet. You got to wait till next week.
I'm fine with it.
But anyways, thank you, Big Nitty Smitty. Big dot nitty dot Smitty.
And I will say, we are your favorite podcast and you are our favorite Big Nitty Smitty.
Yes. We can't disagree with that.
We reciprocate.
Yeah.
So, all right, I guess that's it.
That's it.
Shout out some shout out sponsors.
Sponsors, thank you to Digital Creations for coffee mugs and all kinds of cool stuff like bottle openers and stickers and that stuff that they make for us. Thank you to That Beard Stuff for always keeping us handsome. And thank you especially to El Yucateco Hot Sauce. I had to take a three-day vacation due to chemical burns down under. And I'm not talking about Australia, but I did take a three-day break, but I'm back. I had some more last night on my low-carb sandwiches. And it is delicious. It made low-carb lifestyle be bearable. So thank you so much, El Yucateco.
Again, this coming Saturday the 12th, if you are in the Southern California area, if you want to support the Relay for Life and some cancer research, if you want to cosplay and get your nerd on, come and show up at the fairgrounds. Come and meet us. We'll be giving out some swag.
Yep. Maybe we can have a hot sauce stuff. Challenge or something. Yep. I'll just bring plastic spoons and
Saturday
and hot sauce.
Ooh, that'd be good. Saturday, March 12th, 2016 at the Kern County Fairgrounds when we'll be there.
Hit us up on Facebook if you need more info and we'll be happy to share. I'm sure there's a fee, but the fee is going to cancer research. So don't be a cheap ass. Pay the fee.
Yeah.
Help cancer research.
I don't know about that. I don't know what it's going to cost, but it won't be much. I know that, if anything. It might just be for the concert and gameplay and stuff. But come check it out. It'll be fun. It's put on by our friends here locally, Paladin Game Castle, two people who own that, Kurt and Cindy. Awesome people. They're very good to the community and try and give back. So pretty good to go out and support them and their friends who are running this thing. So that's pretty much it. So
awkward goodbyes. Goodbyes are hard for me too.
No, I like to just drag it out for Dave. So no, that'll be it. Listen to us. I actually have one more theory on JonBenet Ramsey that the dad was a Mason. So that would be why he didn't get in trouble for killing his daughter.
That would make sense.
So you can listen to that.
Nothing like going out with a bang, man. Blaze of glory right here.
Well, that is a blaze of glory. Because if you want to know more about Masons, tune Friday. In for our next episode.
Yep. Freemasons. Don't be retarded.
My parents got some big money problems. We're all young and we're counting on them. I'm 4 years old. You think I'm bouncing on them? I just sit back and watch, thinking about them. Mom's probably stronger than Pops is. The talk is that the old man has lost it. Last week he came back from work. I saw him on the porch with a glass of milk in his shirt. He was flipping out. Mom probably put it there. Judging by how angry that she was, it probably should be there. Now both folks know that I'm standing there. Mama protects me, throws me behind her back. Why did Papa do that? What's that telling me? Birds can't help but sing a melody. I ain't stupid. Happy ever after is nothing but a fantasy. Police are part of our family. Son and mother look out from the porch. See father's head duck under the door. I believe in nothing. I believe. Papa got some big anger problems. I'm getting older and I'm sick about them. It's getting harder just to live around it. I need to take a stand as a man. I need to be about it. So ring around the posy around the living room table. I can't remember what we were arguing about. I stood up to the scariest man in the country. I held my head high as I left the house. Little boy stood in the face of a dragon. Left with the heart of a lion, amazing. It's funny, I left the house so it could cool down. But the dragon stayed hot, who's a fool now? Papa and the devil, sitting in the basement. A-R-S-O-N-I-N-G. Young son headed back to the household. Running down the block, 8 fire trucks deep. Fell to my knees and I screamed in the front yard. Firemen running around like no one's in charge. Sort of like when it rains, it pours. See the flames burst out of the door. I believe in nothing. I believe in myself. I believe in nothing. Nothing at all. I've learned a lifetime. Time as a
inside waiting for.
Got an apartment, I'm 20 years old. Finally thinking I have everything under control. It's been years since I spoke to the man when he gave me his old cutlass to get out of the sand. So just like a hyena, I take the meat and then I run my ass away. You need to let me be. But over time, a part of me knew I needed to speak. That's right when the world decided that it couldn't be. It's the biggest hurdle thinking past tense. When a strong man takes his last breath.
I believe.